President Obama said the protests represent a genuine, legitimate frustration over a decades-long failure to reform police practices and the broader criminal justice system in the U.S. This is one of the reasons why Kenny Stills takes a knee.
Bill O'Brien yesterday, about an hour ago, day ago, 24 hours ago to the minute, he met with the media at 9 o'clock yesterday, made a pretty powerful statement about the world around us right now and what he and the Texans intend to do moving forward. I thought this one that I'm going to play here was very interesting, Seth, because he talks about, this was towards the very end of what Bill O'Brien had to say, and it had to do with, and I'm sorry, Seth, our Zoom just went out because my computer died.
I'm looking at the screen of myself, and I feel like it's just me reclining.
My computer's not plugged in, and the battery just died. This is Bill O'Brien.
Very responsible of you, Sean.
Talking about having his players.
Serious social issues going on
big
here,
time.
And you're not even plugging your computer.
Can't wait to see what Twitter has to say about it.
You're like, I'd like to see you in charge of an Apollo mission, Sean.
I'm barely in charge of my own laptop. What are you talking about?
Guys would still be stuck out there in space.
They'd be dead. Yeah, no doubt. Here's Bill O'Brien. On having his players' backs.
I've told my players since 2014 that I have their back. I told my players in 2017, I have your back. And I will continue to tell them that I have their back. If they need time to themselves, they can have time to themselves. If they need resources from us to try to begin to heal, we've got to help them. We have a lot of resources here to do that. They will get it. And finally, if they just need someone to listen, maybe they don't want to talk to me about it, but we have plenty of people here that they can talk to about it.
Seth, I thought that was super interesting that he brought up 2017, that he openly brought up 2017, because we know what he's referring to. He's referring to the week in October, in late October, when the ESPN article came out that revealed that in an owner's meeting, Bob McNair used the phrase inmates running the prison. It caused all kinds of chaos around the league over those next few days, and it caused some chaos in the Texans locker room too. I think DeAndre Hopkins left practice that day. We know that they were already in the middle of a contractual dispute with Dwayne Brown, with sort of a secondary layer of some of Dwayne's speaking out on social justice probably tainting the relationship between him and the team a little bit, and then that those comments come out. You and I have talked about this earlier in the week. Bill O'Brien stood by the players and stood by specifically Dwayne Brown back when that happened. So, anybody who's surprised by what Bill O'Brien said yesterday probably shouldn't be based on what he did back in 2017.
Well, and I guess I think if people were surprised, it was more by just how extensive his comments were. Mm-hmm. And I think by how passionate his message was. And I don't think he was doing this for any other reason than that he feels strongly about the issue himself, and I think that he does genuinely back his players up in that. Now, to what extent and how far, people could argue about that, and I'm sure different players feel differently about that. I think that at the very least, if there's one thing I'm learning through all of this and that I've learned over the last few years, so often people don't need you to agree with them all the time, but they do want to be heard. You know, and through a lot of this sometimes, whether it's this issue or anything else, I think a lot of people just feel like the other side isn't listening to them at all. And I would say that on both sides. I'm not trying to stump up for one side of any debate here. I would say that's on both sides. People feel that way. And it is trite as it is to say, like, oh, we need to have a conversation about this. I think we do. I think we need to have conversations where we're actually genuinely listening. And I think O'Brien has had a lot of those conversations. It is also interesting, though, that we also, the other one huge storyline, or one of the huge storylines this offseason, has been DeAndre Hopkins saying that he felt like he had no relationship with Bill O'Brien. So I don't think that all of a sudden, because Bill O'Brien came out and said this, that, hey, he's going to have a perfect relationship with every single player
right
on his team. But in terms of this one issue, I think maybe I think maybe some players on the Texans will feel more like their coach is listening to them than perhaps in other situations.
Yeah, here is Cecil Shorts obviously played for Bill O'Brien back in 2015. He was on the afternoon show yesterday with Clint and with Show, and I encourage you to find it. It was a really good conversation with those three. Cecil was on the team back in 2015, and he said this is an O'Brien that he saw back in 2015.
This is something that will resonate with the guys. People talk. And when your coach stands up and says something like this, and he means it. Now, is this going to have to continue as far as, let's see what happens next, right? So as far as the organization, what would they do in the community? What would they stand for? What would they say? And then that's a whole other department, right? But when your head coach comes out and says stuff like this, other players take notice. Other players see their coaches either not say something or how they said it and how they act on a regular basis. They're going to communicate with the players on the Texans team and say, hey, what's Bill Yo like over there? Is he really like what he says? You know what I mean? Is he really back in the community like he is? Is he really supportive of whatever we got going on? And when the players can back the coach, that's going to attract a lot of people to come over there.
Seth, where does this make the biggest difference with players? Is it something that resonates with players in the locker room right now? Is it an immediate thing? Is this something that Bill O'Brien, I don't think his purpose for doing this yesterday was for it to be a recruiting tool or anything, but I would imagine that there's a lot of players around the league who knew very little about Bill O'Brien other than he's the guy who traded DeAndre Hopkins and, you know, who got knocked out of the playoffs by the Chiefs 51-7. Yeah. Who learned a thing or two about Bill O'Brien yesterday, who may think more favorably of him today if the time comes. We know it's a league where a lot of these guys wind up playing for multiple teams.
Right. I mean, I'm sorry. So what was the first question that you asked then?
I guess, do you think this is something, like, does O'Brien's, whatever O'Brien's statement did yesterday for how players think about him, is it something where the effect is more immediate on this locker room, or is it something where down the road guys are thinking of going and playing for a team, and this is something where they think very favorably of what they remember from Bill O'Brien?
I don't know. Like, in a way, you know, I think what Cecil said is true. It's, okay, you know, how does a team operate moving forward? Is there – lots of people can give speeches, and then the speeches kind of fail. And, to put a strict football analogy into it, it's like a great pep talk, right?
Yeah.
If you're a coach who delivers great pep talks, but then you have no game plan, well, how much does that pep talk do? You know, you give a pep talk before you go out and get your butt kicked for 60 minutes. Yeah. Then it doesn't mean a whole lot.
It's a good analogy.
But I think that it's probably, in some ways, maybe it's a removal of an obstacle. And I hesitate to even draw any conclusions about what it might mean to a football team, because I think it means more to a society perhaps than to the success of the football team itself. And that there's also, I talked about this yesterday, Sean. Like, I get really nervous when you ask guys, like if I ask Cecil, like, it's not my place to ask Cecil, hey, Cecil, what does this mean for black people? You know, because it lumps everybody together. It's like, Cecil, it's going to mean different things to different people. But I think it's further along than maybe it is on some teams.
Yeah.
I think that, like the Texans right now in Denver, based on what Vic Fangio said a couple days, and then he clarified his comments yesterday, Denver, with a relatively new head coach there, is going to have some conversations when everybody gets back,
right?
You know, and between Vic Fangio and the players, and try to figure all that stuff out. I do think that it can, if I think about, to like a non civil rights political issue, but just a coach like Tom Coughlin. When Tom Coughlin was with the Giants, the year they won the Super Bowl in 2007. He kind of had a reckoning with his players, where a bunch of players were just flat out on Tom Coughlin.
Mm-hmm.
And Coughlin was at a stage in his life and in his career where he was willing to change some things and was willing to kind of change the way he operated. And that was, you know, that was nothing nearly as important as this stuff we're talking about. But it was a barrier. It was an obstacle between him and his players. He removed that obstacle, and they went on to do great things afterwards.
Yeah.
You know, and I think in some ways, for the football side of things, what does this mean? Maybe it's an obstacle removed between Bill O'Brien and his players to where, yeah, maybe other things do operate differently.
Yeah, I say that totally understanding that it's way down on the list of important things, but it's something that's super relevant on our show because Bill O'Brien is one of the central figures that we wind up talking about, it feels like, on a daily basis. We go to the hotline right now and talk to our good friend Patty Smith, who, of course, hosts the interview show Queued Up, which is going to be dropping again tonight, 7 o'clock, HoustonSports.org. Harris County Houston Sports Authority, Patty Smith joining us. Patty, how you doing?
I am doing fine. Good morning, guys.
Good morning. Mario Elie. This is a good one. Mario Elie tonight on Queued Up. How is Mario Elie doing these days?
First of all, this is a good one. But honestly, have I not had a good one yet?
No, you've been knocking it out of the park. You've been doing awesome.
They've all been, yeah. No, our Houston athletes are great. And yes, Mario was... you know, phenomenal. He's been on a couple different, I've seen him on some different shows throughout the past couple weeks, you know, with it being the 25th anniversary of the Kiss of Death shot. And so, yeah, he was great. He reminisced about, you know, those championship years, talked about that shot, and talked about, you know, kind of the current state of the NBA and what's going on now. So we kind of ran the gambit. It was great.
Yeah, and I guess, you know, the current state of the NBA and how they're working their way around this, how does Mario feel about that based on your conversation with him?
Well, he was pretty blatant about it. I mean, he didn't dance at all. He felt like his biggest concern is making sure the players didn't get hurt. And knowing the amount of downtime that's been going on, he felt like it should just be playoffs teams only that come back. And we did this interview before yesterday's, you know, announcement and news came out exactly how they were doing it. But he was like, look, people that don't need to come back don't need to come back. He doesn't want to see the players getting hurt. There's a you know, kind of a being in shape, and then there's game shape, and it's two very different things. And he just didn't feel like there was the time to get back in that shape, especially if you didn't really have anything to play for. So I think probably the way things played out is pretty close to what he would have liked to have seen. But again, his number one concern was player health and safety.
Patty Smith, Harris County Houston Sports Authority, joining us, queued up. She'll be interviewing Mario Elie, or the interview will be dropping tonight, 7 o'clock, HoustonSports.org. Patty, you covered those teams that won those championships back in the mid-90s. You've been covering sports here for a while now. Where does Mario's Kiss of Death rank among all the famous plays the famous plays that you've covered in your time here?
Oh, my gosh. What a great question. I think it's up there. It's one of those ones that you can, you know, it's probably not one of those where were you at the moment type things, but it's one of those ones that you see it, you don't even have to hear the audio. You know exactly what's being said, and it's one that's just followed him, and he loves it. He says he walks around town, and it's not, hey, Mario, or hey, Rocket, hey, Elie, it's hey, Kiss of Death.
Yeah.
I mean, that's how they refer to him, and that's what they call him. Not even Junkyard Dog, which he actually did go into some of that too, but he loves it. He loves going around town. He loves that people remember him specifically for that. He jokes about the moment, and he kind of really broke down, you know, kind of the jawing that was going on back and forth between him and Joe Klein. So, yeah, I think it's as memorable as it is for everybody else. It's even more so and more dear to his heart for sure.
I think I'm not sure if it's number one, but if I had to argue one in a court of law, I would argue that one. You know, that's the one I would pick to argue because it's got an iconic name. It has a great backstory both within the season, the playoffs, and that game with Joe Klein. And it won an iconic game 7 for this city. I mean, they came back from down 3-1 as a 6th seed in that. So I think that would be my number one, I think.
Hard to argue with, honestly. Yeah. You have to probably give me a couple more. I'd have to have a little more time to think about what some of the other ones that would even compare would be. But pretty tough to argue with on that one.
That's your homework assignment, Patty. Next Thursday, we need you to come back with your top three. That's what you
do. As if I don't have enough else to do.
That's right. I'm giving you homework assignment. So Mario Elie tonight, queued up, 7 o'clock, HoustonSports.org. And Patty, you'll be streaming it on Facebook as well?
Yep. We have a Facebook Live watch party, and I'm on it. We're interacting. It's a lot of fun. So 7 o'clock, I encourage everyone to hop on and join us.
There you go. We look forward to playing some of that Mario Elie audio on the show tomorrow. Patty, good stuff as always. We'll talk next week.
All right, thanks so much, guys.
There it is, Patty Smith joining us on the program. All right, Darren Revelle is going to join us at the bottom of the hour. There is going to be NBA basketball again. It's on neutral courts, though. Some of the actual ideas to create a home court advantage are somewhat hilarious. We will tell you what they are next. We're going to get basketball back towards the end of July. 22 teams, 8 regular season games will feed into a playoff. The only wrinkle with the postseason in terms of the structure of it is that if the 9 seed is within 4 games of the 8 seed, there will be a miniature play-in in which if the 8 seed beats the 9 once, they remain alive. If the 9 seed beats the 8 seed twice, then they are in to the round of 16 of the postseason. I'm slightly disappointed. Seth, I'm excited to get basketball back. And I'm excited to watch the Rockets again, but I'm a little disappointed the NBA didn't get a little more exotic with the things that they were doing here.
Well, you know what I'm disappointed in, Sean? I'm honestly disappointed that we now, and this didn't even just hit me until now, this is the second time we've talked about this morning, that we're not going to have basketball in Houston this year.
Right.
It just, I guess in some respects, I'm a little bit shocked that they've completely abandoned the notion of potentially playing in your own arenas in front of quarter stadiums or half stadiums or whatever it might be, you know, 2 or 3 months from now. I wonder if maybe the NBA will regret having to, you know, maybe I'm going to wonder if they regret committing to this, but if they also, maybe they have a plan for pulling out of it and going back to the home cities if circumstances change in 2 months.
Yeah,
or if we feel like we have more clarity on what you can and cannot do.
It's interesting. I suppose it's a possibility. The one thing I would say about that, Seth, is that they seem to be the most cautious of all the leagues.
Yeah.
I mean, hell, this plan they're executing now isn't starting till July 31st.
Yeah.
You know, in terms of the games getting back on the court, which is kind of insanity, because we talked about this earlier with baseball. Boy, is baseball doing damage, even just by being contentious with each other, the owners and the players? Are they doing damage to, even if they come back, are they doing damage to the image of the sport and whether or not fans want to watch it? Because it's going to be a highly competitive TV contest for eyeball landscape that these sports are going to be dealing with. The NBA, by waiting 2 more months to do this, is voluntarily plunking their postseason down against the first 5 or 6 weeks of the NFL season, which is insanity to me.
It's insanity. Like, in a normal time, it would be insanity. This would be like the USFL deciding to go to fall football. But it's not normal time. You know, when the USFL decided to do that, they didn't have the benefit of a virus forcing their hand. It was just their own stupidity that led them to
do
that.
No, they didn't. But I'd love to know the reasons why they're waiting so long, you know, till July 31st.
Yeah, I think, like you said, they're super cautious.
Yeah.
I think it's all, they're trying to move forward with safety first and foremost in mind. And they are, you know, to the NBA's credit, the NBA was over in China. Well, they were in China already, but they were investigating the coronavirus far before a lot of other organizations or governments were doing it.
Yeah.
So I feel like I'm not going to criticize their actual response. It was a little bit of a shock, I suppose, that, oh yeah, okay, this is really happening. They're definitely not going to be back in Houston this year. And so I regret that a little. I'm glad the Rockets are going to have their chance, but I regret that I'm not going to be able to see them in person.
So these are all going to be neutral court games, right? Because they're all going to be played in Disney World. So they're all neutral court games. Seth, here are some ideas the NBA has floated to give some semblance of a home court advantage to the higher seeded team. And let's rapid fire these and you tell me what you think of them. We don't have to go deep dive on all of them. You ready?
Yep.
Higher seeded team gets the ball to start the second, third, and fourth quarter after the jump ball to start the game. You normally, team wins the jump, they get the ball then, and in the fourth, the other team gets it second and third. This would be the higher seeded team getting the ball basically to start the second, third, and fourth quarter.
Why are they doing this? Oh, to give the home court advantage.
Because there's
okay,
no fans, right. There's no home court advantage.
Honestly, reward the
teams that have been winning.
Yeah, I know. You led into that with saying, hey, this is how they're going to overcome the lack of a home court advantage. And then as soon as you said it, I was so appalled by the gimmickry that you were presenting that I completely forgot what you were talking about.
Okay.
That feels so damn gimmicky. I feel like, again, okay, this is a different time and a different circumstance. Screw your home court advantage, all right? You know what, LeBron? If you wanted home court advantage throughout, then you should have done something about this coronavirus. Maybe when Daryl Morey was trying to speak out about Chinese issues, maybe LeBron, you could have spoke out too instead of trying to squelch the voice of Daryl Morey. I blame you, LeBron James.
Okay, so then just tell me then, I want to run through a few of them quickly because there's one in particular that we have to get to.
Okay.
But these are suggestions that have been made to reward the higher seeded teams because these games are going to be played in Orlando with no fans.
Yep.
You should tell me, gimmicky or not gimmicky? Higher seeded team can designate one player to get 7 fouls before fouling out.
That is a gimmick I like.
Okay. You like that one.
Yeah.
Who would you designate on the Rockets?
It's like when you want things vanilla in the bedroom, except for that one thing.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a damn Puritan. Oh, except for that one thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, that sounds good. I feel like now the hatchet men of the league, though, are going to have a big advantage. I feel like Pat Beverly is going to feel like he's got a license to kill.
If he's the one guy, yeah. If he's the one guy you pick to get 7 fouls. Higher seeded team gets an extra coaches challenge.
Whatever. Fine. Great.
Okay.
Yeah.
Higher seeded team can use their own hardwood.
That sounds
dirty.
That sounds too expensive.
Oh. Right?
their own. They can use their own hardwood?
Yeah. Like, so if you're the Lakers, you get the Lakers floor. they can send their floor to Orlando, and you can so at least gives you the feel of being on your own home court.
Is it going to have the same dead spots and everything?
I don't know.
Is it going to be different than when? Okay, yeah, go for it. Okay. Yeah, okay.
One executive suggested having a menu of advantages and letting the higher-seeded team choose one before the game. This is like choosing a lifeline on who wants to be a millionaire.
Having a menu of so all these advantages you're listing.
So all the ones I just listed, it's like, here, choose one.
I like this. That's the gimmick I love.
Here's the advantage
you're at Disney World,
chosen.
Right?
Yeah.
Make it like a carnival thing where you have a big wheel that you spin, and we'll see like everybody will be rubbing their hands together.
This is my favorite one. This was an actual suggestion to help reward higher seeded teams. Teams get to choose which hotel at the Disney complex they can stay at based on their seating.
Okay, that's gimmicky, and I don't think it's going to have an actual substantial effect, but I feel like it's an award that those teams should get. I'm okay with that.
I feel like they should televise it and put it on the Disney Channel.
Yeah.
Right? That would be a great advertisement.
Look, when nobody picks the Contemporary, it's going to be all the
workers. What are you talking about?
The Contemporary sucks, Sean.
The Contemporary is awesome.
Because you got the monorail going
through. The monorail goes through there. It's badass. And you get a balcony that faces the Magic Kingdom. You can watch the fireworks show, and you don't have to be among people.
This is the problem with the Contemporary Resort, Sean.
What's that?
It was Contemporary in 1982. Just like the World of the Future and all these other rides at Disney World where you're like, okay. So this is what people people in the past thought the future was going to be like. Okay.
Okay, two things. One, I'm going to side with you. One, I'm not. Real quick.
It opened up in 1971, by the way.
Right.
The Contemporary.
Okay, so you don't stay anywhere that's opened up since 1971.
Well, not when they call themselves the Contemporary.
They update themselves, and now all of a sudden they're Contemporary again. I'm going to say two things. One, this is the screw you to Seth Payne. Amy and I stayed at the Contemporary in 2017. It was very, very nice. They've updated it since then. Number two, you're right. The best is when you go through Space Mountain and you do that walk through the futuristic world after you get off the roller coaster, and it's all like these mannequins that look like these mannequins that are like showing you what the kitchen of the future is going to look like.
Yeah.
And I remember going to Disney World as a kid in like 1979. And I'm like, there's no way they're going to have phones where you can see the other person. There's no chance. What are
Video,
you talking about?
Holograms, 3D printers. Are you crazy?
All right,
no, but calling that thing the Contemporary is like calling George Wallace a progressive.
Okay.
It's I'm Disney. I'm Wilderness Lodge or bust. Plus, I think the Wilderness Lodge is kind of close. I was about to talk out of my ass. I'm going to say it seems in my mind like it's close to the Wide World of Sports where they'll be playing. But you know how it is when you get there. You just go where you're told to go.
Shuttle bus to go everywhere. Yeah. What about the Grand Floridian?
I think I stayed at the Grand Floridian.
That's
once,
the most expensive one. That's like the super expensive one.
Why'd you have to say that? Now it sounds like I'm bragging that I stayed at the Grand Floridian.
Oh, sorry.
Even though I stayed for like 3 weeks. Whatever. But
it's where I lived my rookie year in Jacksonville.
The Grand Floridian, you do feel pretty fancy.
Yeah.
They got like this grand music playing and everything, and you're like, oh, I feel like I'm King Louis XIV of Mistress.
Seth, yeah, can't we just go all the way with this and say you live there your rookie year and you had a limo driver take you to Jacksonville every day?
I did. I made a 2-hour commute. I always like, honestly, the Polynesian Resort. I never stayed at the Polynesian Resort. Look, I lived in Florida, so I went to Disney World a lot.
Right.
I never stayed in the Polynesian Resort, but the notion of having a luau every night intrigues me.
I like that. Luau's are great.
Good for team bonding and building, right?
Yeah, no doubt. No doubt. All those Mai Tais, the table full of Mai Tais. Would the funny part of that wouldn't be seeing the Lakers stay at the Grand Floridian or the Bucks staying at the Polynesian. The best part about that would be like the Wizards or the Kings staying at that crappy one with all the cabins. The wilderness resort.
That's the cabins, yeah. I just found that one.
Yeah.
Or even better, just like staying at the Days Inn across I-4.
Yes,
just
yes.
Give them like the
Holiday
real.
Inn.
Yeah, give them the. Like I had my childhood experience with Disney where my mom got us a motel and we drove the Dodge Omni to Florida and we stayed at some crappy motel. And it felt like a 2-hour journey just to get to Disney World in the morning.
We took our kids to Disney when they were little. When they were like 4 or 5 years old, we went on a Disney cruise, and we went to Disney World for a few days before that. And we stayed a couple days on the Disney property, but we also, just to kind of cut corners, stayed a couple days like across the street from Disney at the Holiday Inn.
It's a much better deal.
Well, price-wise, it's a way better deal. And this particular Holiday Inn was hilarious because they tried to almost... These properties that are right next to Disney try and create a reasonable facsimile of the Disney atmosphere. So you had all these jacked up paintings of Mickey Mouse on the walls of the room that we stayed in at the Holiday Inn. You know what it looked like, Seth? You remember how The Simpsons looks really crisp for like the last 29 seasons, but the first season back in 1989 looks like a fourth grader drew it? That's what these Mickey Mouse drawings looked like on the walls of the Holiday Inn. They were like, they looked like someone drew them left-handed.
What if those were like the original Walt Disney sketches when he was just workshopping stuff, you know?
Then I'd have paid much more respect to them than I did at the time. I'm like, these are horrible.
I'm kind of jealous of these basketball players that they're going to get to have this extended Disney vacation.
I know.
And play basketball while they're doing it. It feels like some mythical college experience that you know, to actually be playing. You're living on campus, basically, but your campus is Disney World, and you don't have to go to classes. You just go play basketball for a few hours a day.
Right, awesome. and then go play golf or go to the parks or whatever the case may be. All right, Darren Revelle is going to join us in the next segment, Action Network. How close to suicide is baseball right now? We'll get to that next. We are efforting Darren Revelle of the Action Network right now. As soon as we have him, we will chat with him. Anxious to see how close he thinks baseball is to completely, not just chopping off its nose despite its face, Seth, because they may have done that already, but basically chopping off their entire head. Basically decapitating themselves, baseball. Yep. Seth, are you muted right now?
Not that I know of.
Okay, now you're not. There you go.
Okay.
Yeah.
I don't have a mute button in my setup.
Okay. So. Okay. Maybe Ben had you turned down.
I think this is the first time in history that I've been more optimistic about something than you, or at least one of the rare occurrences where I'm more optimistic about something than you. I think baseball is going to figure it out. They're just going to do it in the sloppiest, ugliest, most, hey, I'm going to have an argument out on the front porch with my whole family so the whole neighborhood can hear type of manner. You know what baseball is being right now, Sean? You live in a nice little neighborhood, relatively quiet at night.
Yeah,
You've got the NBA here next door. You've got the NFL. Mm-hmm. Next door to that, you have you have the NHL, kind of bunch of weird Canadians on dual citizenship visas.
Right.
You know, not taking advantage of your low tax rates, but still, you know, all that stuff. They're friendly but weird. And then you've got MLS, and then you've got Major League Baseball. In Major League Baseball, Major League Baseball commands about like 80% of the calls about annoyances and disturbances in the neighborhood. It's like always like nothing bad, nothing too bad, but a whole lot of screaming and shouting at like 2 a.m. about no good reason. They're playing their music too loud. They're just a pain in the ass in the neighborhood. That's what Major League Baseball is right now. And ultimately, like, they're not going to get divorced or anything. They're just a pain in the ass. And that's what's, they're going to play, because if they don't play, they're screwed. The last labor stoppage was in 1994, and it took 5 years to recover from that, as Darren Revelle, who's going to join us shortly, had said on his Twitter. I think this time it would take at least 5 years, and I don't know if they'll have the benefit of steroids to bail them out like they did that last time.
No, okay, that's a good one. What will Major League Baseball's gimmick be to bail out when they ultimately screw this thing up?
Right, they had the labor issues.
Yeah.
Everybody hated baseball, but then steroids magically revitalized baseball.
Right, magically.
Until you found out that it was steroids.
Yeah.
And then now, yeah, what are you going to do? What is the steroids of 20... If there's a work stoppage this year, what are you going to do that could be the equivalent of steroids in 2021?
I don't know if it's the equivalent of steroids, but I'll tell you this, and you know this, I'm not bringing this up because Revelle's about to come on with us here hopefully in a minute or so. I think that gambling is going to pick up gigantic steam everywhere when it comes to sport. I think one of the side effects of the pandemic is going to be A, that I think some states are going to be ratifying legislation to approve of sports gambling in their state a lot sooner than they thought they would. I think ultimately it's going to be legal in all 50 states, like a lot of things. But some states were going to be slower than others in bringing it to the forefront. Every state now is going to be dealing with some sort of deficit that they weren't planning on a year ago.
Yeah.
And I think sports gambling has proven for some of the states to be a way to recoup some of that and make some revenue. So I think that's number one. And I think in the short term, I think gambling on sports is going to be wildly popular because, A, the people who like to gamble a lot have not had a chance to do much of that lately, so there's going to be a huge uptick in that, and B, there's just going to be so much sports. I think we're going to see some new people coming to it because it's the legalization of it and the prevalence of it that there's going to be once all the sports come back. We'll see new people, and it's a big activity with younger people. Younger people like gambling on their phones.
Hmm. That makes me nervous, Sean.
Why?
The gambling on phones does make me nervous. Anytime you make something, anytime you make a vice super easy, you get a little bit nervous about it. Because it's like any other vice. If done responsibly, it's fine. But some people are going to have a really hard time with it. So I suppose anybody that has an issue, anybody that has a hard time with gambling right now has already like gone through the lengths of figuring out how they can do it. And you can do it illegally enough that I suppose, like, I don't know if you're going to see a huge spike in people that have issues.
The only thing I would say about that is, assuming that people who are new to it are doing it using an app or using, you know, using something electronic, is that you've usually got to put the money out there. You know, you've got to give them, you've got to let them charge your credit card $500, and then you're playing off of that balance, and then you can cash in your profits. You're not calling up, you know, Joey Bag of Donuts and saying, "Hey, give me $100 on the Flyers right now," that kind of thing. You know, you're not doing the verbal credit.
Right, that's what you do after you max out your credit cards, Sean. That's when you start calling Vinny. Vinny doesn't know. Like,
when you say
I don't
you,
know,
you mean a general you, right?
Do bookies take a credit check? Do they check your credit rating before they extend you some credit? That's really, Sean, that's where the business model is flawed with bookies. They got to start being stricter with their credit rating guidelines.
I was wishing we would get Ravel. We haven't gotten him yet. We're seeking him out right now. I wanted to ask him about that table tennis league that you sent me the article on earlier this week. The Russian table tennis league that's getting all sorts of gambling activity.
And people aren't even really sure that this league is doing things above board.
Could be WWE for table tennis.
Accurately monitoring their it's kind of the Wild West right now. And it's also a moment of opportunity, Sean, where I feel like we've probably missed the boat on this now that real sports are returning.
Yeah.
I feel like we could have started up some league that people could gamble on online, and we'd probably already be billionaires.
Sucks. Yeah, I was hoping to chat with Ravel about that.
What sport would you take other than table tennis? Like a bar sport like foosball or something, I think would be fun.
Foosball would be good. I would say darts wouldn't be bad. Beer pong, golden tea.
Yeah,
these are all things I feel like I've gambled on at some point or another anyways.
Well, what sport are
billiards.
You most – what bar sport are you most likely to sit and just watch at a bar? Where you're just watching on, you know, the same way somebody might watch people play video games
or
whatever.
Sit and watch somebody play. You know what I like? Shuffleboard.
A really long
shuffleboard with the sawdust on it.
The bar shuffleboard where it's a raised table.
Yeah. Oh, we got Ravel? Okay, we've got – Seth, we need to hold on to this topic. You know why? Well, no, I'm not going to share it here because I don't want the idea to go. I have an idea. I got an idea.
We're going to get rich.
I got an idea. Richer. Yeah, I'm going to share it with you off the air. That shows you how good an idea it was. We're joined right now by our good friend from the Action Network, Darren Ravel. Download the free Action Network app today because we're going to get sports back here pretty soon, Darren Ravel. The NBA, we know we're going to get back. The NFL, looks like as well. What the hell's going on with Major League Baseball right now?
They are just not coming close.
Yeah.
You know, as people know, it's a labor situation, and whether it's number of games or, I mean, I think once Max Scherzer fired that shot across the bow that they're not going to be doing much, they're going back and forth and they're nowhere close. But as people know, in labor situations, it only gets real when both sides think it's the rubber meeting the road. And I guess we're not there yet.
Yeah, Darren, you tweeted the other day that when they had the work stoppage in 1994, it took 5 years to get even some semblance of their audience back. And if they did it this time, it would be disastrous, obviously. And I'm curious if your thoughts, baseball, if they do come back, they're going to be entering the most hyper-competitive contest for eyeballs in the history of sports. Have they already done some damage to what you think the audience might be just based on how they've been going about their business this last week or two?
I would say that by virtue of them already being in a crowded market that you just mentioned, right? Like normally they are, I don't know if they've done damage by just the going back and forth and not being close and people being upset and, hey, you know, we need this. This can't be a labor situation. I do think the damage does come and has already come. If we return to this schedule, they normally exist pretty much in a nice little consistent vacuum. and they're not going to be able to have it this time. The NBA is going to be playing in August or September, and pieces of October. And so they don't have the, well, I might as well watch baseball that they always have. So I think there's damage there in that they're not in their normal vacuum.
Well, and that's what we were wondering about before you came on, Darren, is you had tweeted out that, hey, it took 5 years to recover from this the last time there was a labor issue in 1994. And one of the things that helped bring fans back was these gaudy home run numbers. We would later find out that they were fueled by steroids. But I guess, like, now, in the absence of steroids, what could baseball do this time around if they felt like they've disenfranchised fans?
Steroids?
Yeah.
above board steroids?
That's what they should legalize steroids.
let's make it an equal playing field. I mean, I feel like they're running out of things to do, you know. They've made promises on game time, but, you know, I was looking at game times the other day of baseball game, Major League Baseball games in the 50s and 60s. And, you know, the average game was 2 hours and 30 minutes. The average game this past year was 3 hours and 5 minutes.
Oh.
I mean, that's a humongous – it's almost like on an average, given so many games, it seems like it'd be impossible to add 35, 40 minutes. But they have, and they're trying to go – I mean – I don't know what the solution is here. I don't.
Yeah, it's crazy. We'll see what happens. What do you think about what the NBA came up with? I was a little disappointed that they didn't come up with a few more fun wrinkles for the postseason. It seems fairly formulaic. Darren, what are your thoughts on what the format the NBA came up with and the timing, which is still nearly 2 months away?
Listen, I think they're just trying to buy time, that they don't want to start over again. I am not sure where we are. It seems like even in my community, in my county, we've had 1,700 deaths, more than the entire state of Texas. People are trying to move on, but then, you know, so I think some of the push out is like, let's just make sure that it's okay and not figuring any relapse or anything. Obviously, they had to figure out how to get Zion into this group.
Mm-hmm.
I like the idea of the 8 regular season games to get those final teams seeded. I think that makes sense. I think it is what it is. I don't think there's much criticism just because they're going to do what they're going to do. What was left out, besides everything that was reported, you know, as far as they can't get their rooms cleaned and they can go to bars or they can go to restaurants, but they have to practice social distancing. I'm still interested to see as to the COVID waiver and what type of responsibility they lay on the players. You know, you're agreeing to return and the liability is not on us. I'm interested to see how that shakes out. But I think if this goes down and everything is coming to fruition and we continue an upward trajectory against the downward trajectory of COVID, man, this fall is going to be fun, isn't it?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
It's going to be amazing.
That's where, and you know, as you're talking about, okay, how are you going to respond? Like, where is this all going? It just made me think of Dr. Fauci yesterday was talking about kids returning to school in the fall, and he said that largely it's going to need to likely be local responses. You know, in hot spots, they're going to have to manage it locally, and every spot is different. And that made me think of when you look at the marches from the past few days, the ones in the Northeast where the coronavirus has been worse, you can see like the protesters and the people marching seemingly taking more pains to have social distance, right? And that's where it leads me to believe.
Or wearing more masks, but I guess now we're really going to test how good those quality of masks are, because when you're protesting, you know, you're essentially spitting nonstop.
Mm. Yeah, yeah. Well, and that's where I think that the NBA, like where every other sport seemingly is kind of, at least in America, they're not necessarily sticking to this idea of a bubble. I do wonder what's going to happen if all of a sudden, you know, there's a second wave, but it's only in three NFL cities and the other cities are unaffected. Then how does that affect it? It seems to be an argument for a bubble somehow, because then at least you can manage everybody all at once.
Yeah. No, I mean, I think that makes sense. And as we know, the NHL is going to go two cities, and I think the cities are going to be determined on, you know, how they're reacting and their ability to service the players in the league in the way they want it. So we'll see. We'll see. It is amazing to look at the gambling stocks and the, you know, DraftKings and Flutter and Penn, and, you know, to see what they're doing despite even no sports right now. I mean, DraftKings is valued at, you know, $13 billion right now. I was looking at Macy's, whose market cap is like $3 billion, despite having like a gazillion times more sales than DraftKings, of course, more revenue. But obviously, it's all about the what people think about gambling in the future, and I think it's going to be one of the first things to return. I mean, I'm going to need to have multiple notebooks when we return. I mean, I might need a notebook per sport, you know?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. You're going to look like a mad scientist. It's going to be awesome. Hey, Darren, before we let you go, we were talking about some of the ideas the NBA had to reward teams with higher records, since this stuff is all going to be on a neutral court. And so I'm asking you this, not knowing if you've been to Disney World before, but they were talking about letting the higher-seeded teams pick what hotel they stayed at Disney World. Do you have if you've been to Disney World, do you have a big board of particular hotels that you would share with those teams on which one to pick?
Yeah, I do not like the Polynesian. I do like the Grand Floridian. I think that's a good one. There's also the Tower and Suites that's part of one of the hotels that I stayed in. I stayed in a 8-person suite. My family stayed in an 8-person suite using the ESPN, like 40% discount on hotels.
Oh, yeah.
How about they offer like better prizes? Like you could get you could run, one team could be on like Space Mountain, just the one team, like, and they can keep going over and over again.
Like
or
a,
they could get like fast passes. Or
yes.
They can win more. They can win more animal. They can win more Mickey dolls.
Right.
Like, why not? Why not utilize Walt Disney World and shut it down for team night? Hey, you guys just get the run of the place. Congratulations on being the first seed. You get the run of the place tonight. You will be the only people at Disney World, and the fireworks, in fact, we'll go over the castle in the shape of LeBron.
And in the colors of the
whatever.
Team, in purple and gold. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
And Darren, thank you for not embarrassing me for asking what might have been the dumbest question of the day. Have you been to Disney World? You worked for Disney. Of course you took advantage of the discounts to go.
I did. And one year I had like 100 magic passes, fast passes.
Oh.
And I was, you know, normally you get 3 per day. But I had like 100, and I looked at all the people online, and I really felt like it was not fair.
Oh, sure, you did.
I felt like I was doing something. You could literally get through Disney World in one day, you know. Which
oh
is
yeah.
Like,
oh yeah. If you have fast passes,
kind of takes the magic out of it, though. Is it part of the? Yeah. You feel like you've earned the Magic Mountain when you wait for 50 minutes
right.
for the Magic Mountain.
No, I don't. No, I don't. No, not with 3 screaming kids. Nope.
Good call, Darren Revell, Action Network. You can download the free Action Network app and get all your updates on odds and scores. It's a great app, Darren. We always enjoy it. We'll talk to you soon.
You got it. Thanks, guys.
All right, thanks. Darren Revelle joining us on the show. Always enjoy that conversation. All right, Seth, we're about out of time. Are you going to be there tonight to talk a little NBA with the people on Facebook Live in the Verizon Artist Lounge?
I would try to keep me away. I will be there.
Okay, 7 o'clock tonight.
Also, by the way, I almost did some work for ABC once, owned by Walt Disney World, of course, obviously. Those guys earned that discount because I was almost going to do some color commentary, it seemed like it was like a three-hour thing I had to fill out for the Disney Corporation to get approved as a contract employee.
Yeah, well,
yeah,
40% discount at Disney World is not chump change, my man.
No.
That is worth it. All right, my friend, I will see you on Facebook Live tonight in the Verizon Artist Lounge, and I'll see you back here at 6 a.m.
I hope you take a bath in just full of COVID antibodies before then.
I am going to soak myself in antibodies. Antibodies to all of you. Antibodies to the listening audience and antibodies to In the Loop. Landry Locker and John Lopez, who's walking in with a fishing pole. You've got them next, the next 4 hours. We'll see you tomorrow at 6 a.m. Have a great day, everybody.
Y'all basic.